The instability in Syria is mirrored by the continuing unpredictability in Egypt, where once promise of democracy...
It felt incredible. Here we are, the first democratically elected president in the entire history of Egypt, the first civilian to ever head Egypt in the modern era. And it was like stepping into the warm sunshine after a long, long cold winter.
That promise has become a commitment on both sides in Egypt to maintain divisions, inflame religious rivalries, and postpone constitutional democracy indefinitely.
The fatal mistake is that the Muslim Brotherhood could have turned to us, the revolutionary, and could have turned to Tahrir and to tell them, we need you to write a constitution that would limit the power of the military. We need you to curb and cleanse the very corrupt judiciary. We would have come to his rescue. And instead, he tried to flirt with the police and the military against us.
These are two voices from tonight's Frontline, Egypt in Crisis, a film by Charles Sennett, co-founder and editor-at-large of Global Post. The film is produced by our partner WGBH in Boston. Charles Sennett is here in the studio. Welcome, Charlie.
Thanks, John.
So much there. Really, the promise of democracy become a kind of stalemate of ideas as well as politics, and you've witnessed it firsthand.
Yeah, we've been covering this Frontline and Global Post together since the very first days of Tahrir Square, when you had that amazing moment of hope, a sense that for all of us who've covered the region for a long time, that the people had actually risen up and overthrown a dictatorship. This would be Mubarak after 30 years of police state. And to think where we've gone to now, 2.5 years later, where that hope has dissipated, violence really rules, the street rules, tremendously lost opportunity here, I think, for American foreign policy. I think we did not hear the voices of the Arab street. I think the White House has been tone deaf on the Arab Spring. And I don't think anything drives that home as much as Egypt does.
Is that an easy accusation to make in the sense that, I mean, so many of us thought this hope and this kind of Jeffersonian democracy was going to sweep across the region. And what we've seen is that, in fact, the end of these dictatorships opens a huge Pandora's box of issues, some of which are thousands of years old, some of which are right on the surface. And it's almost naive to think that this was going to take anything short of decades.
It's idealistic, certainly. I think it's not an unfair expectation. I think the Egyptian people have a wonderful culture, a rich culture. They're well educated. They want a better country. You know, when you go back 30 years when Mubarak first took power, Egypt was on par with South Korea economically. Now look where those two countries are now. South Korea is an economic powerhouse. Egypt is a basket case these days. The dictatorships like Mubarak that the United States propped up and supported gave us what we thought was stability over democracy. Then President Obama gave a stunning and stirring speech in June of 2009 where he went to Cairo University, and said, democracy is a universal right. You know, the people on the street heard that. They believed it. And I think it had a lot to do as a triggering mechanism for the Arab Spring. But I do think the White House, I think President Obama, was slow to recognize what was happening in Egypt, what was happening in the Arab Spring. And I think in that time, we lost an opportunity to find a way to engage with Islamists who are democratic, who believe in democracy. The biggest dividing line between the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda is that Muslim Brotherhood has always, for decades, believed in the democratic system, and they fought to be part of it. Then they win the election, and we don't really support it when a coup starts to happen. Now, al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is Egyptian, who comes out of the Muslim Brotherhood, who rejects democracy, who embraces violence, he now looks to the Muslim Brotherhood and says, you know, we told you that democracy was a Western plant and that it would mean nothing if you actually got elected.
Suddenly that's persuasive.
And there's an argument there on the street that the people here in al-Qaeda seems to be winning in that argument, or at least rubbing it in the faces of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Let me ask you, if you think that the White House was slow on Egypt, what do you think of the schedule on Syria then?
Well, I think Syria is just a tragedy of a completely different proportion. I think one of the most interesting things about the Arab Spring is that every country has its own reality, and there is no reality more dark than Syria. You know, when we all met Bashar al-Assad after his father's funeral, there was like this moment where we could meet him. We went, and he was this young leader who understood the internet. And you know something he does? He's effectively controlled the internet in a way that the Mubarak regime never even understood it. Remember, we used to call Tahrir Square the Facebook revolution. In Syria, there's been a very interesting dynamic in which I think he does understand the digital age. I think he also understands that as an Alawite minority, he's going to do whatever it takes to hold on to power. And we've seen the darkest sides of that dictatorship come out. I think that the Obama administration, you know, has been halting and not paying attention. And I think it's all caught up now. And I think we're really in a tough bind. I'm thrilled that diplomacy won the day with some hard work by diplomats and peacemakers, if you want to call them that, over the last week. But during that week, 1,000 more people were killed in the war in Syria.
Charles Sennett is co-founder and editor-at-large of Global Post. His forthcoming Frontline film, produced by our partner WGBH, is called Egypt in Crisis. Be sure to catch it. It airs on PBS tonight. Charles, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.